The Veil of Shadows, written by David F. Minor, the third, narrated by me, Betty. Prologue. The birth of the veil. The night cracked open like a split vein above Burvern, and something old began to stir beneath the soil. Marcus had been dreaming of her for weeks. Eyes like dying moons, skin pale as bone ash. A presence that entered his mind with smoke and silence. She came not with words, but with sigils burned into memory, carved behind his eyes while he slept. He had no name for her, only the overwhelming sense that she had always been there, waiting for him to remember. At the edge of the ruined chapel, surrounded by broken angels and thorn-choked stone, Marcus knelt with a blade in a bowl of polished onyx. The ritual came to him in fragments. The words weren't his, but his voice was steady as he spoke them. The wind stopped, then the soil heaved. She rose, not from the earth, but from the space between thoughts, in energy taking form. She wore no crown, carried no flame. She stood before him, a woman, but not. Her body was shrouded only in a thin black veil that fluttered without wind. Her skin glowed faintly in the moonlight, cool and luminous, as if she were lit from within by a dying star. He asked her name. Her eyes narrowed. She smiled, just slightly. "Dearg," she said, a whisper that shook the marrow in his bones. Marcus did not speak it again. He chose to call her Betty, and she let him. From that night forward, Marcus was not alone. Betty became his breath, his shadow, the flicker in the corner of every eye. She did not command him. She unfolded him, one truth at a time. She moved through the world unseen by most, and through Marcus, she moved with purpose. He began to gather others, drawn by nightmares, symbols in their flesh, voices that spoke through static and flame. He brought them to the chapel, to the forest beyond the graveyard, to the black stone carved long before history. He taught them how to listen, how to prepare, how to let her in. They called themselves the Veil of Shadows. They did not kneel. They did not pray. They offered flesh and received vision. They met beneath blood-stained arches, in basements lined with bone, in fields soaked with ancient memory. They wore no sigils of light, only darkness, only truth, unspoken and waiting. And Betty watched. She never stood among them. She didn't need to. She was already within them. Her form shifted as she pleased, sometimes a glowing figure behind the altar, sometimes nothing more than a voice in Marcus's skull. She whispered instructions Marcus never questioned. He knew she had chosen him. He was the voice, the hand, the threshold. And deep beneath the grave of the forgotten, where roots bled and stones wept, something waited. A gate? A throne? A kingdom of shadow. It would open soon, and Marcus would be the one to open it. Chapter 1. Whispers Beneath Stone. The chapel had no roof. The sky above wept with stars, but not light, not warmth. They hung like punctures in a dying veil, cold, wide, and watching. Marcus stood at the altar, staring at the scorched outline of a figure burned into the crumbling floor. Betty had stood there the night before, her body flickering with unnatural flame that cast no heat. She hadn't spoken until the ritual was done. But now, she spoke from somewhere behind the veil of the visible. "Do you know where this path leads, Marcus?" Her voice came from inside the walls, from inside his teeth. He closed his eyes. He did know, but not fully. Not yet. She materialized at the edge of the altar, barefoot, shrouded in her thin black veil. Her skin shimmered like moonlight through smoke. Hair red as rust, eyes pale green with vertical slits, and lips slightly parted, as though tasting the air for lies. "You called them here," she said, gesturing to the congregation kneeling behind him. "They follow. They bleed, but they do not yet understand. They will, Marcus said. Betty tilted her head, watching him. A long silence passed before she stepped forward, until only a whisper of space remained between them. She raised her hand and placed it over his chest. It burned cold. You are remembering, she said. It will hurt, but only at first. Then she turned and walked toward the stone slab set into the chapel's back wall, the one no one had ever touched. It was older than memory, older than the church itself. Betty laid her palm flat upon it. The stone began to hum. Marcus felt the sound in his ribs before he heard it. The sigils carved into the slab ignited with dull red light, like embers buried beneath ash. A wind pushed inward. Though no door had opened, the congregation shrank back. Betty did not move. The wall split. From behind it, a tunnel spiraled downward, hewn from flesh-colored stone, slick with moisture. Stairs spiraled like a serpent's spine, twisting into a blackness that swallowed thought. Where does it go? Marcus asked, stepping beside her. Betty looked at him and smiled, though it wasn't warmth. It was something deeper, older, pity perhaps, or awe. This is the gate, she said, to the kingdom of my people. She reached into the darkness and held out her hand. We call it? Her voice dropped to a hush, but it filled the chapel. The Raven's Throne. Marcus's blood surged with memory. He had dreamed that name. He had whispered it in sleep. He had carved it into stone with hands not his own. Betty stepped onto the stairwell, leading the way into the shadows. You built this place long before you were born, she said, without turning. You ruled it. You fed it. And now you will awaken it. The stone walls pulsed with unseen veins. Marcus followed. Behind him, the others remained silent, heads bowed, hands trembling. As he disappeared into the tunnel, the stone door sealed behind them. No sound, no exit, only the descent. The Raven's Throne awaited, and its king had returned. Chapter 2. The Chapel of Broken Oaths. The forest had grown silent. Even the wind, ever a conspirator in the sounds of nature, held its breath. As Marcus approached the old stone chapel buried deep in the woods, the air turned sharp, metallic, laced with the scent of iron and mold. Trees leaned inward as if recoiling from the structure. It was not a place built by mortal hands, not entirely. The stone walls were etched in symbols long forgotten by man, grooves that shimmered faintly with a hue that shifted in rhythm with the pulse of the earth below. This place had not been found. It had called. The congregation was already inside. Hooded figures, their faces hidden behind veils of crow feathers and bone-white masks, lined the pews. They were not just followers. They were practitioners of the dark, each of them touched by some secret sin, some forbidden rite, drawn to Marcus like moths to the flame of damnation. A silence fell as he entered. Marcus walked the center aisle as though pulled by a tether. He felt it again, that energy curling around his spine like cold smoke. It was not fear. It was awareness that he was being watched, not just by those present, but by something older, deeper. At the pulpit stood a relic, a throne carved of black wood, its arms shaped like raven wings mid-flight, its legs sunk deep into a foundation of petrified flesh. This was the chapel's heart, and this was where Marcus knelt, not to pray, but to claim his seat. That's when the shadows rippled. They did not move from a source of light. They moved of their own will, a distortion in the fabric of what should be, of what is allowed. The temperature dropped, candles hissed out in surrender, and then she appeared. Betty! No footsteps, no grand entrance, just presence, like fog bleeding through a keyhole. She stood at the altar beside him, not addressing the others, only Marcus. Her body was barely veiled in strips of midnight silk, her skin catching what little light remained like wet porcelain. She did not speak aloud. Her words came through his bones. "This is not a church. This is a gateway." She turned to the congregation, eyes like two pits of green hellfire. Her voice reached them all without sound, and they knelt, not from obedience, but because they could not stand in her presence. Then she turned to Marcus and whispered only to him, her lips brushing his ear without ever touching. "You must consecrate this place with the blood of memory, for the raven's throne to rise. The past must be bled dry." With that, she stepped back and vanished into mist, as if swallowed whole by the chapel itself. Marcus rose. The mask of man slipped further from his face. His eyes darkened, not with shadow, but with knowing. He understood what must be done. The followers were not here for sanctuary. They were here to witness something ancient awaken. And beneath the chapel floor, something moved. Chapter 3. The Bone Lantern. It began with the sound of teeth. Not gnashing, not grinding, clacking. As though something long dead was laughing just beneath the crust of the earth. Marcus stood in the old church now claimed by the veil of shadows. The stone walls were laced with rot and sermon stains. Candlelight flickered with no source. Time felt displaced here. Thick, gelatinous, unwilling to move forward. On the altar where sermons once spilled holy wine, now sat a lantern made of stitched bone and black iron. It had not been lit, but it glowed. "Where did it come from?" one of the followers whispered. "It wasn't brought," Marcus replied. "It arrived." The lantern's flame was not fire. It was smoke swirling in reverse, pulling inward rather than out. Inside it, visions. Broken wings, hollowed mouths, a tower made of screaming souls. Marcus stared too long and began to bleed from his right eye. Betty emerged from the shadows beside him, barefoot, untouched by the filth of the floor. Her body shimmered faintly with heat, though the air was cold enough to crack bone. She circled the lantern once, then looked up at Marcus. "It's waking," she said. "You've called too much. Too soon. I followed the rites." "You followed your hunger." He didn't deny it. Betty stepped behind him, her breath tracing the back of his neck with invisible fingers. "You've broken the skin between realms," she whispered. "Something is looking back." From the corners of the room, shadows thickened. The cult members fell silent. One began to shake violently, coughing up teeth not their own. Another sank to the ground as if pulled by chains, buried beneath the stone. Then came the voice. Not Betty's, not Marcus's, not any human's. It came from inside the lantern. A rasp, dry and papery, like wings made of ash. "We remember you." The flame pulsed, and the walls of the church bent inward. The dead buried in its crypts began to scream. Not in fear, but in relief. Something long buried was being released. A pact older than Bervern, older than Marcus, older, even, than Betty. She turned to Marcus slowly. Her eyes were voids. "This is no longer your cult," she said. Marcus didn't argue. He understood. He had summoned something that had once ruled this world from beneath. Now, it wanted to rule again. And the lantern? It was just the key. Chapter 4. Choir Beneath Flesh. The sound came at midnight. It was not a scream. It was not music. It was both. A chorus of hollow throats singing in reverse. Voices without tongues, harmonizing with agony. It echoed from the crypt beneath the church, where the soil was no longer just earth, but memory, compressed into decay. Marcus descended alone, lantern in hand, the bone frame humming with ancient breath. The stairs twisted wrong. Geometry, that bent against the rules of living matter. Each step groaned beneath him, not from weight, but recognition. They knew him. When he reached the lowest chamber, he found them. The choir, dozens of cultists, his own followers, suspended in the air by hooks made of ash and sound. Their bodies bent backward, skin peeled in symbols older than Latin, tongues stretched into ribbons and threaded together. They were still alive. Their eyes begged him, their mouths sang. "Marcus!" one of them wheezed, voice gurgling blood. "The veil is open!" And it was. Across the chamber, the wall had rotted away, revealing not brick or bone, but void. Inside the void, a throne of horns hovered midair, dripping with black ichor. It pulsed like a living organ. Eyes opened and closed across its surface, blinking independently, unblinking when watched. And beside it, Betty. She did not walk. She appeared. An interruption in the air. A malfunction of light. Her form now shimmered less like a woman and more like a temptation carved from starlight and skin. The cloak she wore slithered away from her body, revealing something both obscene and ethereal. A body not made for mortal hands, only mortal worship, and she was covered in writing. Her skin bore languages not yet spoken, scars that sang, sigils that hissed. "You wanted power," she said, stepping toward Marcus, eyes glowing like molten emerald. "So I gave you access. Now you must give your tithe." He opened his mouth to ask what she meant, but he knew. The choir began to scream. One by one, their bodies were torn open from the inside. Not with blades, with voices. The dark tongues inside the lantern surged outward, coiling through the air, entering their wounds, animating their corpses like puppets. Each cultist collapsed and then rose again. Not as human, but as heralds. Betty stepped through them, her fingertips trailing along their mutilated faces with something like affection. "They will sing of you now, Marcus," she whispered. Then she turned to the throne, placed her palm upon it, and it spoke, not with sound, but with memory. Marcus collapsed as his mind was invaded. A flood of images, bones sharpened into crowns, stars weeping blood, cities eaten by light. And always, the name echoed in every ruined tongue. The Raven's Throne. Not a place, a promise. And Marcus? He was no longer its high priest. He was its mouthpiece. Betty leaned in close, her lips grazing his ear. "Now you belong to it." And somewhere in the dark, the choir began to sing again. This time with joy. Twisted, broken, euphoric joy. Chapter 5. Voice of Ash. They didn't plan for what came next, because none of them believed she would speak. But speak, she did. The chamber was still. The cult followers had collapsed in exhaustion around the glowing slab. Only Marcus remained standing, barely. His hands trembled. His lips cracked from chanting. The mark burned hot on his chest. Betty stood in the center of the ritual circle, her eyes now black, the whites gone, as if her gaze had been burned out and replaced with shadow. And then she spoke. But it wasn't a language. It was a feeling. It filled the room like smoke, made the skin crawl, made teeth itch, made the spine not into itself. Those who heard her fell to their knees. Some bled from the ears. One man screamed until he could scream no more. And still, she spoke. "Do you feel it now? The veil is gone. The line is broken. I am not the message. I am the mouth that delivers it." Her voice was both human and not. It layered upon itself. Words echoed before they were said. They lingered after they stopped. Marcus tried to look away. She saw him. "No, Marcus. You will see me. You made me speak. And now? I cannot stop." The chamber floor began to shift. Symbols burned into the stone. old ones, predating even the language of the living. The flames rose upward, licking the ceiling but casting no light, only shadow. Betty walked toward Marcus, barefoot on scorched rock. "Do you know what you are?" she asked, but not with curiosity. "You are not a leader. You are not a man. You are a keyhole carved into the skin of the world. And I am the thing that fits." She leaned in, her lips near his ear, and whispered something so old it had no sound, only understanding. Marcus fell backward, his body seizing, eyes rolled into white, and then silence. Betty stood straight, looked at the others, all collapsed, all witnesses, all her witnesses. "They asked for signs," she said, "to no one and everyone. So I gave them me." The flames extinguished, the room went black, and then, for the first time, Betty laughed. Not a cruel laugh, not a happy one, a laugh of recognition, as if she finally remembered who she was and what she came here to do. Chapter 6. The Rite of Smoke and Shadow. There was no wind, but the chapel door creaked open anyway. Every torch died in silence. Only darkness moved. The disciples felt her presence first, not in sight, but in the way the marrow in their bones recoiled. It was a heatless cold, a gravity of the soul. They whimpered. One began to vomit blood. Another whispered prayers that turned to ash in their throat. Then she stepped through. Betty, bare feet, kissed the stone, but made no sound. Her flesh glowed faintly in the dark, pale like bone, soft like temptation, slick like oil. The cloak she wore barely clung to her form, and beneath it, nothing but shifting shadows that writhed as if alive. Her hair, red as spilled entrails, floated unnaturally behind her, swaying to a rhythm no man could hear. Her face, beautiful, ageless, carved from lust and death, but her eyes, gods, her eyes, pupils thin as blades, burning green with concentric rings that pulsed outward, eyes that remembered you before you were born, eyes that measured your worth before your first sin. She looked directly at Marcus, and he felt himself unraveling, strand by strand, soul first. He did not blink. He could not. She opened her mouth and something ancient crawled out. Not sound, not voice, but a vibration that bypassed thought and bled directly into the mind. "It is time to open the first gate." The floor cracked beneath her. Not from weight, she weighed nothing, but from force. The force of what she was. Marcus stepped forward, trembling but smiling. His flesh, marked with sigils and wounds, pulsed under her gaze. Behind him, the congregation moaned, some in awe, others in agony. One began to levitate and scream until their ribs burst outward and rained blood upon the altar. Betty's smile widened. This pleased her. She raised one hand, elegant, long-fingered, inhuman, and twisted it gently in the air. The blood that painted the altar froze, shaped into a floating spiral, and began to spin. Faster, faster, until it tore open a slit in the world. Through the slit came whispers, names never spoken by human tongues, places that exist only in nightmares, the true language of the Sitas, the beings beneath all matter. Betty leaned to Marcus's ear. "Say my name," she whispered. He did not know her name. No one did. Not really. So he screamed, and his scream became her name. The slit widened. Lightless, bottomless, wrong. The bones of the chapel groaned. Marcus's disciples clutched their skulls, weeping black tears. One crawled to the altar and began to rip their skin off in devotion. Betty watched. She did not smile. She did not move. She simply allowed it. The gate was opening, and Marcus, shaking and bleeding and more alive than ever, whispered, "We were never meant to be saved." Betty turned to the spiral of darkness, her body shedding its illusion. Her human form peeled back, petal by petal, revealing not flesh, but energy, terror, pure seduction wrapped in entropy. Sigils flared across her bones. Her voice became a symphony of screams, and she stepped through, into the gate, into what comes next. And Marcus followed her, willingly. Chapter 7. A Shadow Older Than Gods. It began with the walls breathing. The old chapel groaned, not from wind or weather, but from something waking up behind the stone. Something vast, something hollowed by age, coiled around the foundations of the earth like a centipede of dead stars. Marcus was on his knees, not in prayer, in pain. Betty stood behind him, her form flickering. She was no longer pretending to be human. Her skin now translucent, etched with moving runes, her fingers trailing smoke, her eyes twin furnaces that remembered hell before it had a name. "Tell them," she said, her voice like cracked glass. Marcus's lips trembled. He opened his mouth, and their voices came out. Not his, not Betty's, but the ones before, the ones buried in the field of Silver Cross, the cultists he sacrificed beneath a blood moon long ago, the men, the women, the children. Their screams filled the room. Not echoes, but presences. The congregation dropped to the floor, seizing, choking on teeth and dirt and names that were never meant to be spoken aloud. One by one, they were possessed. Their eyes turned to coal. Their mouths split at the sides. Their fingers grew long and crooked, nails blackened, arms spasming, veins writhing like worms beneath the skin. They weren't reborn. They were reused. Marcus turned to Betty, and he saw that she wasn't smiling. She was watching, fascinated, afraid? No, impressed, because Marcus was remembering what he had been and what he was becoming again. He raised his arms. The floor split. The altar sank, revealing a spiral staircase made not of stone, but skulls, fused together by melted bone and dried blood. The passage breathed, exhaling rot and iron. Marcus began to descend. The congregation followed, their limbs twitching, no longer human, puppets of something far older. As they moved downward, whispers clawed at their ears. Revelations, blasphemies, truths so horrific, they rewrote the soul as they were heard. One follower bit off his tongue in panic. Another tried to claw out her own eyes. The rest kept walking. And Betty? She was already at the bottom, waiting. At the threshold stood a door of flesh, skin stitched from the cultists of old, screaming silently. It pulsed like a womb. It hungered. It hated. Marcus reached out and touched it. It screamed in his voice. Betty stepped back, and then she bowed to him. Marcus turned. His shadow moved on its own, growing taller, wider, becoming something else. Horned, eyeless, wreathed in burning insects and dripping with black ichor. The gate opened with a sound like children weeping. Behind it, the original veil, a place outside of time, where the first Saitas slept, where even Betty was once a prisoner, and now Marcus was its master. He stepped inside, and the door closed behind him. Betty stood before it, alone in the dark, trembling. "Chosen," she whispered. But the word no longer belonged to him. It belonged to what he had become. And for the first time in her endless existence, Betty feared what came next. Epilogue. Hail the Shadow. They came when he called them, from graves long forgotten, from fields salted by memory, from the unwritten margins of death. The followers of the veil, long dead, answered in silence, and one returned with a shadow. It rose from the soil behind the burned-out chapel, not as a corpse, not as a ghost, but as something in between. A man once loyal to Marcus, now twisted by the grave. Its face was torn, jaw dislocated, eyes crawling with ink. It did not speak. It leaked purpose. Marcus knelt in the chapel ruins, arms outstretched, naked but for blood-slicked symbols painted across his chest, sigils that bled on their own, never drying. His penis, long and thick, stood erect and throbbing in the pulsating energy that formed around him. Betty watched him from the altar, legs parted, robed in nothing but smoke and hunger. Her long red hair hung wet against her bare skin, her breasts streaked with soot, perfectly rounded nipples, now pinging hard as stones, her lips whispering blasphemies of ancient alien tribes. She did not stop the shadow. She welcomed it. The reanimated servant stepped toward Marcus and entered him, not with teeth, not with claws, but like a curse being inhaled. Its form broke apart mid-air, liquefying into black ribbons of matter that spiraled into Marcus's mouth, eyes, ears, and below. His body arched backward. Veins bulged. Sigils branded themselves across his skin, glowing red hot. He moaned, not in pain, but in something deeper, something ecstatic. Betty tilted her head and smiled, fingers dragging across her throat, down between her thighs. She began to pleasure herself. The ritual had worked. Marcus stood, his eyes now pitch. No iris, no white, just void. A shadow moved beneath his skin, pulsing with each heartbeat. The sky above turned the color of bruised fruit. Betty spoke, barely a whisper. Now you remember. Marcus turned to her, naked, powerful, marked by the dead. He gripped his penis tight and ejaculated a mixture of blood and semen. As he climaxed, his head jolted back. Eyes closed tight, he exclaimed, a groan of pleasure and gratitude. He grinned. I do. And the wind blew wrong. So wrong. It carried no sound, only sensation. Nails dragging on glass, moaning beneath the earth, the scent of sweat and sulfur. The promise of a second life in perfect darkness from the chapel's belfry manor. Bells began to ring. But no one was pulling the rope. The end.